Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World programme. The question of time is probably not one which we give much time thinking about, because we always feel that we have so little of it. For thousands of years, philosophers and scientists have struggled to understand what this thing time is. We know that it can be distorted through using gravity, and we know that time is subjective, because it can move slowly or quickly. And when we're dead, it perhaps ceases to exist in the normal way that we have thought about it. Now, one man who does have definite views on time is Dr. David Wansborough, an Australian professor, previous visiting esteemed professor at Moscow State University, a theologian, writer and artist. David has been coming to Russia since 1993, when he was invited by the Australian Embassy in Moscow. And since then, he's been visiting every 6 months, giving fantastic lectures. He's widely known in Russia and beyond for his solo art exhibitions in Russia's museums and libraries, and of course his writings. His 10th book about Russia will soon be published. We thought it was high time that we got him onto the programme to talk about time. Welcome, David.
Hello, John.
Now, David, how did you become interested in time?
It was when I was standing outside the headmaster's office in the third form waiting for a caning. I looked at the clock. I looked down. I looked at the clock 20 minutes later and only 1 minute had gone by. Time dragged out until the caning.
Right, right.
And later I met the headmaster in a trolley bus, and he had aged so much in 10 years. And I thought, he wasn't the same man that had caned me. He was rather pitiful, old and small.
Yep. Now, you've travelled around a lot. You're originally from Australia, I believe, so you're aware of the Australian culture, the Aboriginal culture. And I presume, I don't know, that they have a different understanding of time. Is time dependent upon culture?
I think so. Look, my brother was Burnham Burnham, and I loved him dearly. He was my brother. And we used to do experiments trying to...
Your brother was an Aborigine?
Yes.
Okay.
Spiritual brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to say it was ridiculous. White men carry round watches to tell them when they're hungry, instead of listening to their stomach, that they had to look at their clock to see when they should wake up, rather than look at the sunlight. Mm-hmm. But he had a strange notion of time. He believed that the Aboriginal people had their origin in a dream time, and so that the past was always with them, that if they stood on certain parts of the earth, they remembered the history of that place. And so for a white man to come and say, we'll take the uranium out of there, was a sort of like saying, let's sell the altar cloth in Reims Cathedral sort of thing. It was a sort of ultimate blasphemy, because the past was always with him. But we in our culture are always planning for the future. You look at all the school lessons. You have to work your mind to exhaustion to try and get good marks so you get a good job. All of the universities are job training schemes now. You are looking towards a future which you never quite catch up with. But let's get on with this.
If time is a subjective quality that is linked to different cultures and ways of perceiving the world, does that mean that the Western concept of time, which I understand very, very simply to be something to do with measurements, and considering time to being a series of units which we have predetermined, does that mean that our Western view of time is not the only view, and it may not be correct?
And even the Western view has different concepts. Mozart, when he saw his first metronome, said this is the end of all music, because music depends on pulse. And you listen to an old man snoring. It's sort of mechanical, but listen to a baby breathe or a child skipping and seeing something and becoming excited. This has to do with pulses, which is quite different from a measured interval that's regular. We are wage slaves. We look at the clock when we are recording on the radio. But notions of time is when something begins and finishes. We get somebody in to dig something for the dutcher. We have Faisal, who doesn't care about the time. He starts and he works right through to the end until the job is finished. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say, I've got to have a lunch break. He works until the job is finished. Yeah. And in fact, notions of time actually go against skill and excellence. when you're composing or music or writing or painting a picture, time is not a notion that you consider.
But then this...
Or working on physics.
This reality that you're talking about now, this thing called time, which I think goes beyond physics, that means it also goes beyond Cartesian logic. It goes beyond, it goes to the pre-Renaissance. It goes right back to words, words having additional meanings to things, you know, with their object, the sine and the cosine being together. And this is a whole different way of looking at the world. Could this be, perhaps we're having this discussion now, and it's interesting that we're having it now as a sort of mankind's coming up to almost a cul-de-sac. Are we going to destroy ourselves? Are we going to self-destruct? Or are we going to find another way?
Can I come back to another thing? Because I'm the ultimate Cartesian. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am, and I want to think. But you see, for years...
Well, how can you think when you've limited yourself then to very measured units of time?
Well, exactly. You see, I've spent many years in hospices, writing biographies of people near death. When HIV/AIDS was spreading through the West, people had very little time between diagnosis and death before proper drugs were available.
Right.
And now these people have a longer lifespan than the average person in the community. So the medication must be available. Okay, now, when I was in the hospice, I was thinking what people did in their lifetimes and their thinking and then their feeling and what they actually did. Did they build their own house? Did they start their own business? What they'd done in their willpower? And it seemed that no matter how they told their story, it mattered who they had met. And you ask them, this person that changed your life, how did you meet them? They say, it's very strange. My car didn't work. I went to the taxi stand. There were five people in line. I started talking to the woman behind me. And she said, look, the traffic's dreadful. Why don't we just have a cup of coffee? And almost every incident where you meet somebody that's essential to your existence, it's been where you have had a series, a sequence of events that weren't planned that bring you up to it. And this is the question of free will. If certain things are essential for you, where has the free will come?
I think we're just about to take a leap out into some really interesting territory. But before we do that, let's take a short break. Welcome back to Brave New World Programme. Today we're talking about time, something that we never have time to talk about. I'm honoured to have as a studio guest in Moscow, Dr. David Wansburgh, previous visiting esteemed professor at Moscow State University, theologian, writer, artist, and lecturer. Now, we were just about to hit the superdrive button into some very interesting territory. Now, if time is something that needs to be measured, there are areas of our existence when we talk about and we're aware of things which are beyond time. And one of them is synchronicity. And in Jung's explanation, synchronistic frequencies don't have meaning. And they're not coincidences unless they are meaningful. Look, now, you just started talking about talking to people who were dying or just about to die. Are you saying that there is some sort of hidden meaning to things beyond the surface level?
Well, look, I've got to the stage, although I would say I was more Freudian than Jungian, because Freud said the greatest human drive is not sexual but thaumaturgic. Thaumaturgic means believing in wonders.
Yeah.
And that when you start talking about chance, coincidence and interconnectedness, you sort of leave yourself open to gullibility. However, when you start discussing with somebody mutual contacts, contexts and contacts, you'd be surprised at how somebody you thought was in one department of your life is interconnected with essential people you know.
And this is beyond time then, isn't it?
This is beyond time. It's as if we ourselves identify ourselves not as monastic people who would only be solitary, but we come to a knowledge of ourselves by how we react with each person in front of us. And so when somebody dies, we have to readjust because there's somebody that elicited some part of our nature that no one else knew about. Now, when people are looking back over their lives and looking for nodal points, it's only when you're in a crisis situation that you actually become aware of things. Just the same as when you come across a word and you've never seen it before, you look it up in the dictionary, And then the next week you see it 20 times. It's always been there, but you've never noticed it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that once you start becoming aware that meeting certain people are essential for your identity, and you look back and you see the great causal chains that lead to you meeting that person, it seems that the two are connected. Now, if that's the case, then the Western world, as we said before, looks to things in advance. They don't live in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the Russian Orthodox Church is wonderful because you get totally involved in the ritual of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes timeless.
Mm-hmm.
But, and almost all of Christianity is a mystery on reflecting or casting your bread upon the water and think also of the lilies of the field, etc. Same with Buddhism. You live mm-hmm. in the moment. And you can't say, as Islam does, that it is fated, it is the will of God. I don't have that attitude, although I'm
right.
sympathetic to Islam. But I think that once you start thinking about your life, it's as if you are remembering the future.
Okay,
when you meet somebody that's important to
yeah.
you. You know immediately they're important to you.
Well, also that gives us human beings a sort of additional reason for existence, perhaps. We're not just units of production or parents or children. We could be something else. We have some other function. If you're saying that meeting with people, but it's not just any person you're talking about, is it? You're talking about people who somehow are able to show you something that you weren't aware of before, reveal a new word to you, and therefore you have to find out the meaning of that.
Can we put it another way? You see, I've, whilst writing biographies of people near death, I've seen a lot of people die, too many people mm. die. And nobody has ever said that they wanted to buy shares and they regretted not buying shares in Gazprom. What they regretted was that they didn't spend more time with their children
mm.
or go fishing more often or take an interest in a charity,
mm-hmm.
or be nicer to the neighbours. This
well,
is
now
the
you're
things
talking,
that matter.
Now you're talking about a very Eastern way of thinking, actually.
Well, it's
I
a
mean,
very
this
Western
is,
way
I've lived
thinking
in Russia
too.
For 28 years,
yeah.
and this is I'm still fighting against that. You know, I'm still fighting against that very Russian way of looking at the world.
Mm.
No, I don't want to slow down. I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about that. I don't mm. want to talk to you because I'm not in the moment. It's very confronting sometimes. Are you suggesting perhaps that a really good assessment of time and rethinking what this is all about could also lead to a re-understanding of everything, of the world, our relations, way we structure society, everything?
You see, we become moral because we examine our own actions in the past. It has to do with memory.
Yeah.
But if you were to think morality isn't when you obey a rule because it's written down or a law or because you're afraid of a punishment, you become moral because you see the consequences of your own action.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that initially through looking back to your past. But what happens if at every moment you have foresight and you say, I have got certain choices? You are actually creating a future.
And this is what you mean by remembering the future?
That's what I mean by remembering the future.
And those people who are dying, they're what? Remembering the past? To become more aware of their last moments in this time-space continuum, as Jung would put it?
Well, look, I think Kubler-Ross was right when she said when people are approaching death, they say, why me? And then they get angry.
Yeah.
And then they become fatalistic, and then they become numb. But
yeah.
then they start to notice their carers and ask about the nurse's children and things like that. And if people have got a proper approach to death, actually, in almost every case, people feel what a gift life was,
mm-hmm.
whether it's short or long. I had a young friend called Aaron McMillan. He died shortly after his 31st birthday, a genius composer who put an entire book of mine to music. And he was much acclaimed in his lifetime, and the surgery was filmed because he was loved in Australia. And Aaron knew he was going to die. And he got to the stage of saying, what do I leave behind? My music? That'll probably fade.
Mm-hmm.
My cricket? No. Mm-hmm. There are cricketers everywhere. But the people I loved, I feel, are part of me forever.
With those wise words, I'm afraid we have to bring this program to a close because we've run out of time.
Or as they say in British pubs, time, gentlemen, yeah, please.
Time, gentlemen, please. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. David Wansborough, Australian theologian, writer, artist, lecturer, and human being. And thank you to listeners for being with us today. Tune in again next week. Goodbye.
Brave New World.